You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening.
Are there any questions or anything?
Words and poems you shared yesterday rhyme so well with two lines from the poem I love from Mary Oliver. She writes something like, "You do not have to be good. Just let the soft animal of your body love what it loves."
She's a prophet in that poem. I think she really gives voice to the modern Zen or what I call embodied Advaita, embodied not well.
What is embodied Advaita?
It's what we're doing here.
Oh.
Letting the soft animal body love what it loves. Have your body love. And it's discovering that even, okay, being in the body is something to, like, we can realize, like, right, okay, here I am in the body. But then discovery of the body not being what we thought it was, and the body not really being in the body. Basically, it's like uncatchable and bigger than our skin.
That's the elusive part. That's the elusive.
Yeah.
Coming to that.
It's elusive, like, because what we're trying to look for it with wants to, like,
yes.
Get its little pincer in them.
Yeah.
Have it.
Yeah.
It's like if you listen to music and you sing along, the singing usually doesn't really go. It sounds good to you, but not outside. It would be kind of like humming along or singing along to some music. And we start to get confused as if our humming is causing the music. Like that with our thinking. Like we think, like, I think, therefore I am, is just like humming along and thinking that my humming is causing, is the leader of the music and making it happen. So 2 days ago when Damon was like, "I'm not quite here." And we talked about here-ness. Another way to talk about that would be to feel, so each of us in our own experience. So Damon's words that day were, I don't feel quite here. Right? Something like that. Close enough?
Yeah.
Okay.
It still applies.
Yeah. So feeling what your thing is that drives you crazy, that you're just, So he was using the word here. Could be, I'm not quite peaceful, or I'm not quite open, or I'm not quite whatever. But then, even though the bulldog that had the bone was like, no, I'm really not here. But then another part that said, yeah, I taste here-ness. And so one way to inquire is to feel in those, in the experience of here-ness, is there I? Is it that the more sense of here-ness, the less sense of I? And that can help us understand really experientially what that really super slippery eye thing is a bit more, and how it works. So what do you think in here-ness? In here-ness, what do you find in terms of I, the presence of I, or less presence of I? I-ness and here-ness.
I'm not really equipped to answer that today.
Let's go for it then. Because you think you're not equipped. So here-ness. I keep finding my hand goes like right here when I'm talking to you about here-ness, like back and down, like for many people. Like, here's me not enough and not equipped to answer that question. And yet, like, giving off full of here-ness at the same time. So any even slightest bit of taste of here-ness that's available to you now.
Well, we've been talking that time about aliveness.
Okay. So aliveness. Okay. You were saying, I'm not quite here.
Yeah.
And I was saying, you taste here-ness.
Yeah.
Which feels more accessible to you right now, aliveness or here-ness? Doesn't matter.
So I'm going to talk about what I mean.
Let's go with here-ness. I was saying you can go with aliveness or here-ness, whatever you like, but let's go with here-ness.
Okay.
Or however, how would you phrase right now the feeling of frustration that I'm not quite what? I'm not quite equipped, but for what? I'm not quite here? Is that still? Yeah. Okay. No, whatever you feel more like.
I really liked when you did that. That was pretty spot on.
So still, the taste of here-ness. We talked about the other day. Any memory, any about when you felt like you were here?
Since then.
Any time in your life?
No.
Yeah.
There's only one time. No reason, I was walking down the beach and then I sort of stopped and was just checking out the 10 years later when I started meditating.
Mm.
But yeah, my mind had just stopped.
Mm-hmm.
That's about the only time I can remember.
Mm. Okay. You're hard on yourself.
Sorry?
You're hard on yourself. But can you say anything more that you remember in your body, the sense of your body, that when you were 14 or 15 on the beach? Your back.
My back.
Try to feel for your back.
Yeah.
Now, then, yes.
So that moment?
Yes. Right down your middle. So quietness, you said. Can you feel how it's just completely different kind of tools or whatever? The normal dialogue has got tools. And quietness. Somehow we feel quietness. What were you going to say?
Sense of what you're saying.
Yeah.
And this retreat definitely compared to the previous retreat, I think we're going to definitely say more what you're trying to tell me.
Mm.
But I'm not you. I don't feel like you do.
Yeah. What about this word adequately?
Well, adequacy, yeah, is a big thing.
Does adequacy go with the, like, because of inadequacy, fear of inadequacy, whatever, then? The fight, the tools, the...
I think so. I mean, I've noticed probably in the last year and a half, so this is around everything I do, like, there was a moment when I was at a dinner and I put a glass back on the table. And I did it inadequately. There was a sense that I put a glass back on the table inadequately.
Mm.
And I was flabbergasted. Like, how can one do that? Wrong. And it stood up everything, the world stood, you know? But somehow I've done that wrong.
Mm.
And it's a really tricky sense for me, like, because it coats everything I do.
Yeah.
So it's like a.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a fish in the water.
Yeah.
I can't see the water because it's always hidden.
Yeah.
So when you say that, it is like, if I can get this technique right, if I can do it
adequately, yes.
You know, it'll be adequate.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely there is that.
Yeah.
And that's part of what I'm, this retreat, and it's been a general movement towards, you know, just.
Yeah. Is there a word for this? Just is there? I'm not saying you have to have, but is there a word for that? an inadequate word.
There's a looseness. A flexibility. But I'm discovering in the last 6 months, you can't just have that alone. Because the rug goes off the rails. So there needs to be a gentle discipline with looseness.
I want to let you off the hook, but that's, I want to maybe now just sort of open away from you so you don't feel. But about the looseness and the firmness. And I think the gentle discipline is a lot around feeling all that engagement in the programming, for example, of inadequacy, the expectation of inadequacy, and trying to get out of it. But trying to get out of it from the assumption that I am inadequate. So in a way, there's an assumption that I can't get out of it. So I have to try harder and harder.
Yeah, because I'm inadequate too.
But yeah. And also to hear the way the accounts get balanced is, because of the fear of inadequacy, you have to do it perfectly. And then it might be adequate. And so the loosening, yes. And the discipline, I think, is feeling as much as possible in the body, but any way that's possible, what that engagement in that, the fish in the water, the seeming pervasiveness of feeling inadequate or whatever your thing is. That engagement, like that one leg that we can feel. The discipline of knowing that's not all. That's one thing. And what else might there be? What else maybe is also here? And so Demen is giving us this like uber hard on oneself honesty so that we can all feel like, oh yeah. When we're that hard on ourselves, then all the smaller moments of at-homeness or okayness or quietness, here-ness, just keep getting like swooshed off the table. As if they never happened. For that, as if like we think we're the eyeball. And here we are, the eyeball going around on our planet, separate. Okay, we're dependent on the planet, but I gotta do it. And I can't quite see properly. It must be something wrong with me that I can't see properly. And then so much pressure on the eyeball to try to do what two eyes would do in a body. And so the looseness, this like, and firmness with our attraction to the, that suit that seems to go all around everything. Firmness at least with knowing this is this and that is that. This seems to be true, this seems to be all there is, there seems to be no gap. But I do hear a rustling. I do feel whatever sort of symptoms or signals or snippets or flashes of something else. And it seems to us, in comparison, David and Goliath, but like times, I don't know, 1,000 or 1,000,000 or something. But that's like really from the perspective of the one eyeball that is like, well, we're all about force and I've got all the force. So like you, what are you? You're nothing. And from the perspective of Luce, we're not so interested in like picking a fight with that. And then we just like, whoa, we like happen to fall over and it's like, oh, that's so much more than adequate how that worked out. In small and big things, big meaning also subtle and inner and important. But even just for example, yesterday I didn't have the chance to hang my laundry before the morning meditation thing. And I was like, oh, sitting in the bucket there. Inadequate. Yep. I didn't think that, but it's like, well, I'm just, being a mom, you get so used to never getting it right, but you have to be loose. But we could just also say, being a human being, it starts to come across that. And then I got back to my room at some point, and the monkeys had come. And they'd like, well, they took my clothespins. They took my clothespins and took them apart, you know, all, and I don't know where they are anymore. And they, something that was sitting out on the veranda is all picked apart. And so I don't, it's good I still have some clothes to wear.
Is that even take your wet clothes apart?
Exactly. If I had been like really on the ball,
yeah.
I wouldn't have clothes. Just wear my pajamas though. And that's a thing. It's not just a one-time thing. It's a thing. It's a thing we can gamble on. So yesterday, the poem about the red maple leaf, scarlet maple leaf, and the white dewdrops. I'm curious if anyone had that come in to your practice, your process, since yesterday. Just curious.
Can you please speak up a little bit? Can you repeat the
space? I'll try.
Thank you.
I don't feel so much like yelling these days, so if I don't manage, I'll ask you to come closer.
Okay.
And I'll try. So how far back should I rewind? So just the poem, the red leaf, the white dewdrops, the red beads, regard the red beads, scarlet beads. I'm just curious if that did anything, if it came up in any way in your practice since yesterday. Just curious, not that you like should have an answer or something at all, or even a question, but you might.
Is so abundant, and everything is so big. That the plants I have at home are like this, and they're like up to the roof. And just that they were fearless. And that line reminded me of that energy of life. So fearless. Wherever you go, there's this incredible vegetation going on. Because there's water, and the sun.
And people who love plants.
Who love what?
Plants.
Yeah, the whole country loves pot plants in front of their houses everywhere. Yeah.
That helps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just what that gives. That power of influences.
And how does that come across in your body? When you let that come across? Yeah. So how does it resonate, or how does it come up in you in that presence of that? How does it speak to you? What do you feel?
That abundance of luscious. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, totally. Luscious. Yeah, tell us what luscious is.
Luscious.
It's like it's so full and fresh,
Delicious.
It's a type of delicious that's like cream. Delicious cream.
It's kind of luscious to me is like, I love the kind of pair or shift from that fearless, that it's paired with luscious. That feels really important to me. Luscious gives a feeling of yummy, but also in a sensual kind of way, more than just like the taste is very nice, from the spoon. It's like the mango dripping or the cream, the texture in the mouth, like it's a whole round experience. I mean, it is taste, but like she said, cream.
It's like fearless. It's like you've got rid of something, but luscious is just there.
Yeah,
it's just warm,
exactly.
Like that.
Yeah.
I don't really know. It just there, and it was just that really strong sense of we don't have to do it the other way.
Yeah. So this, instead of picking the fight with fear, loving the, when it's clear, and it's the welling up of lusciousness. Yeah.
And that, allows to be. There was things on trees. There was flowers that were growing in symbiosis on trees. So you can grow the flowers onto a bark of a tree and then
Beautiful
went down and things.
Yeah.
It's a lot bigger than that, never been a new tree.
Yeah. Yes, great. So it's that also how it's like we get the feet like that it's a great image or it's a real thing that also a tree just with a flower growing out of its bark, that out of nowhereness, like the dew on the leaf. I think it's such a great metaphor the way the water comes as if out of nowhere onto the leaf and then seems to have within it the color red. So that kind of the clear space, rather than being in the fight with fear, that there's a clear space that the coloring of emptiness, the coloring of spaciousness, the coloring of lusciousness can fill it, can well it. And so just the way the poem goes to end with the regard the red bead, the scarlet bead, and to play with going from the end of the poem back also. So the different forms that seem to be solid seems to be a red bead, scarlet bead. And then kind of going backwards, like feeling for how the form, the shape, the perception is a coming together. Like something coming out of nowhere and then reflecting aliveness, or holding aliveness, being filled with it. And yet, and so sometimes in a kind of difficult situation, a conflict situation, it's so easy to go back and try to fight the fear. And so when I talked about gambling the other day at the lake, gambling on what we love or honor or bow to or feel is true or what is. Because Damon's raising this question now a couple of times, like, yeah, but it doesn't pay the bills, he said the other day. Looseness. If you go with looseness, your life goes off track. And so the possibility of gambling on, like, through the, not just gambling on looseness, but looseness allowing me to feel that emptiness in the form. Possibility of staying true to love even when I'm afraid or upset or whatever. To stay home even though all the alarms are saying run out of here. But it's true, it's not actually gambling on looseness. Looseness is the process to uncovering what we love that we can gamble on. And then staying true, let's say, to love or to what is or to lusciousness or quietness or here-ness or presence, some of the words that have come up, wholeness. Staying true, even though it's not a solid thing that we can, you know, keep track of. But staying true to it, staying available to it. And the discipline in staying instead of going for the tools, going for the fight. And staying loosely with it as it is. Not knowing what's going to well up lusciously. Not knowing how to respond, what to say, what not to say, what to do, what not to do. And the discipline of really finding, so all the looseness and then that the firmness of keeping that saying it's inadequate, whatever it is, it's going to be inadequate. It's already inadequate before you've started. The firm, like really getting muscles there, that we can keep that yes, that is being said in my blood, in my, you know, body chemistry. It's not just words in my mind, it's a body chemistry of inadequacy. But guarding a sacred space for lusciousness, even though I'm under attack, even though I have to pay the bills. Even though someone, you know, hates me and is harassing me. So not picking up the fight, it doesn't mean actually sometimes it might be necessary to hit someone. Kick them. Whatever. It might. Love might. So loosening so that we can enjoy the way that everything receives scarlet, lusciousness, hueness. And even while all our equipment is engaged with being wrong, the non-equipment is available for luscious. And that's a loosening and a firming. Loosening so that we're more and more able to feel the lusciousness, and more and more loose, more and more able to leave room for the equipment being on, and that's really a pain. And it's so tiring. Sometimes we can turn it off. Really, when it really sucks, sometimes it's even easier to turn it off and just really hear that is a thought. And then, whew, luscious. And then the thought comes again. That is a thought. But if we can just feel the equipment is engaged, there's the equipment. Here is non-equipment, this sometimes tiniest little rim. It feels. And then tuning into it, it's like, whoa, endless. So just getting really clear about what the equipment is about, the hope and fear. So it's not only the difficult emotions of like fear, terror, rage, embarrassment, shame, inadequacy, etc. Not enoughness, different kinds of not enoughness go to those difficult emotions and also to things like hope, that kind of hope that's based on I'm not enough, so I hope. It's also part of the alarm system. And even when the equipment is fully on, the mountains of us are also in what we could call now or here or whatever. We start to feel now is not about time so much. Sometimes in the moment a decision is made and we feel like that decision got made just in the now, right now, on the spot. And other times it's just, we don't know exactly when now happened, but out of now, out of the silence, it just became clear, lusciously. So I would invite you to really feel what is your version of what Damon has described. What's your wall that keeps you from being quite here? And how does all that feel? And what's the predominant emotion, like frustration, because I've got to get rid of this, what inadequacy is for him? Inadequacy.
Yeah, exactly. It says we actually are afraid. It's not that we are afraid of our
darkness.
Darkness. We are afraid of our light and power.
Yeah.
found it out. And really, it's exactly says about that. It's this is what actually frightens us. That we have so much power. Our light actually is more frightened. We're more frightened in our power is more frightening than our happiness.
Hmm. Yeah. So our construction of ourself as the I, this one little thing, feels threatened and is threatened by the fact that that isn't me. That's not all. And that isn't enough. And so our feeling not enough is actually a good sign of like, hey, yeah. The problem is that you think that you're that thing that's not enough. That it isn't enough. And it isn't alone. It isn't this small, helpless, like, ball of jelly.
I think something about becoming something whole, becoming, is, it's like, oh, maybe it's egoistic, you know, to feel like this. It's, you know, it's ego. That's the problem. We don't let ourselves be fully what we are, because then maybe we are not I is there, ego.
All kinds of excuses come up for not being with what is, for not letting that bigness and that smallness live together in harmony. We say, oh, that's ego, to say that I'm that big. So people that put it in the words of God and say, I am God, they have that experience, and then they get killed, because it's not only scary to that person. There's a poem by Mirabai. Friend, this body is a great ocean, concealing reefs and sea vaults heaped up with jewels. Enter its secret rooms and light your own lamp. Within the body are gardens, rare orchids, peacocks, the inner music. Within the body, a lake. In its cool waters, white swans take their joy. And within the body, a vast market. Go there and trade. Sell yourself for a profit you can't spend. Mira says her Lord's beauty cannot be measured. She wants only to live near his feet. So that's her language for gambling on it. Go there and trade. Sell yourself for a profit you can't spend. Her Lord's beauty cannot be measured. So this thing of being on retreat and sometimes our feeling of double mind about going in or not, of really giving ourselves quiet or not. We have a like yes, no. And Mira talked about getting so quiet she could hear the bloodstream, her own blood streaming. And that not just for itself, like not just as a feat, not just as an achievement to prove her adequacy, but for her love, to get that quiet to receive the lusciousness. And so we could so easily, if someone would say, yes, my body is a great ocean, I have heaped with jewels inside, we wouldn't really want to hear it, depending on how it would be said. Enter its secret rooms and light your own lamp. So I think it's great that you bring that up, Daphna, because it's one of the ways we stop ourselves is having the yes, no, maybe that's ego. Maybe that's too good. And something in us through loosening, yesterday Becca talked about some feeling of response, of intimacy with herself, and she was pointing here, to her chest. Some kind of looseness, that loosening that allows just a natural honoring of the sacred in ourselves. Enter its secret rooms and light the lamp. Go and inhabit the sacredness in your own body. The secret rooms. It's not for show. It's not for protection. And even if those movements of show and protection also contain vastness. But being with them, it's not good company. It doesn't direct. Into the gardens, the inner music, the lake, the vast market. Where we can sell what we thought we were for more than we can spend. We can sell the not enough. We can trade it. For a profit we can't spend. That the luscious is such a great word, thank you. Because it has the feeling of just overflowing with. It's not just tasty, it's like tastiness filled with more tastiness, kind of, without being pushy. It's just with that feeling, as you said, of allowed. It's delicious and uber delicious and allowed to be not just tasted, but it would be like So going into the body like that, into that ocean like that, but the luscious ocean. And even if it feels like we're kind of dragging along, like we're chained to that box of inadequacy and we're just dragging it along, the looseness is not what we're being loyal to. The looseness allows us to be loyal to. It allows the natural loyalty, the natural like, yeah, yum. And we forget about that fight with fear. It's not even that we try to stop, you know, but we start, it's a discipline of forgetting, getting into the lusciousness so that we forget about that challenge to prove my adequacy or to get over fear or whatever. So the scarlet beads, the reflection of the leaf in the clear dewdrops, then the way spring comes across even on a bare tree. And I love the way in the translation into English, the bare bough, that the way that even though it's spelled B-O-U-G-H to mean the branch of a tree, but the feeling of a bough, like a bough. And nowadays, in India, there's some kind of bowing that happens in a commonplace way as well as in every way. So many kinds of bowing in India, actually. But even in our secret inner rooms, to allow ourselves to bow, to allow a bow. We don't. one of my Rumi poem companions came with me today. And it starts with a quotation from the Bible. So it starts with a quotation of God. Lo, I am with you always. So if we think of the empty bough that still spring comes across, or we think of the clear drop that the scarlet color fills unimpeded. Lo, I am with you always. If we think about what we're frustrated because we can't get there, I can't quite be here, and then the actual experiences of here, the absence of what and what and what, the absence of the fight with fear, for example, or trying to prove something, or whatever, that we've gotten. It's like we got these impacts that dislocated us and then we got off track. But there's secret inner rooms are still there. Their secretness is not only, it's not really problematic in a way. The secretness of the inner rooms where we can go and light the lamp. The slipperiness, our shyness about them. It also, in a way, means it's not touched even by our worst impacts and traumas. The sacredness is intact. Lo, I am with you always means when you look for God or here-ness or presence or fearlessness or whatever, when you look for God, when you look for here-ness, God is in the look of your eyes. Here-ness is in the look of your eyes. Wholeness is in the look of your eyes. In the thought of looking. Nearer to you than yourself or things that have happened to you. There's no need to go outside. Be melting snow. Wash yourself of yourself. So one thing I love in the lines is that even the whole drama and the whole equipment being engaged in trying to prove something, and at the same time putting the brakes on, making it impossible to achieve that. That whole thing, still, God is in that. Aliveness is in that. Here-ness is in that. Presence is in that. Which, even though we have so much suffering in feeling that we lack what we need and love, in believing our brokenness, and getting so involved in that, there's also still a joke. Because we couldn't even make that equipment. Even that equipment is not mine, nor the energy that goes into it, nor the emotions that come out of it, the smoke coming off. None of it we created. All of it also speaks of not me. It doesn't obey me. We don't know where it comes from. We don't know when it's going to come over us, when it's going to be quiet. It also speaks of that wider body of us, the interconnectedness. Because something happens over there and your machine comes on, not by your will and not by their will. There's a really beautiful kind of teaching image of the empty boat. Do you know it? It's so simple and good. So we're in our boat, and we've launched, and it's foggy and it's nighttime. And we're nervous because we're so inadequate. But something moved us anyway. We didn't notice that part. Something perfectly got us into the boat, and the boat is floating. And we start to get used to the sound of the water of the river on our boat, and then we start to hear another sound. Water on another boat, maybe. And it comes closer and closer and closer. We don't see anything, though. It's midnight, it's foggy, we're afraid. And then all of a sudden, crash. The other boat bangs into our boat. And we're all like, what are you doing? Why did you bump into me? Or, oh my God, what's wrong with me? I don't know how to row this thing. Why did I get in this boat in the first place? Whatever kind of thing. It's not safe for me to be out here with these other experienced boat people. I should have stayed home on the way. And then we see the boat is empty. But no one drove their boat into us. We didn't drive our boat into someone else. Just bumped. And so even when there is someone in the boat, when you're having a difficult conversation or whatever, especially those like ongoing conversations with over your lifetime, with like mother, father, daughter, son, cousin, brother, partner, boss, coworker, self, just like taking all of that programming that's driving them as that impersonal, that it's still an empty boat in some way. It doesn't mean we have to say, yeah, come and hit me every time. We can get a little smart. Because when it's a program, it's predictable. We can stop being surprised by that predictable, outrageous being. But what can be cool is at least if we imagine we got bumped and we got so upset, either at myself or at them or at whatever, the design of the boats or whatever, some reaction came. At least we can see that that reaction happens here. Whether there was someone in the boat or not. When it just bumped, we didn't know if there was someone in the boat or not. The reaction to the bump is all here. Does that make sense? No?
That's amazing. For me, it's I used it a lot, this example. Not to take personal, not to take things personally, and to take it to end to quote. Because it's amazing how when it hits you, all the anger, all the rage. I used it actually a lot, this example. And something happened to me.
What's cool about the empty boat is that it helps us, we don't go outside, we can go back in and unravel instead of like, look at me, I'm so reactive. Our own boat is empty too, so we can travel back all the way in to feel. It's understandable that there was rage when the boat rammed into you on purpose. But when I really get this is the reaction that's built in here and can be unbuilt, what is it built on? And unravel, loosen, come back to the beginning where there's that feeling of not enough, of lack, of wrongness that we believed. That we thought that is me, and there, then the defense of some kind or the attack. or the trying to get, the hope or the fear. So then we are able to unravel also our own reaction and not just have it. We can soften into the bottom of it. May all beings be peaceful. May our practice and lives be dedicated to harmony in allowing lusciousness respond through us as a momentum of awakening for all, including ourselves.